Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Well, I'm sure many of you, whether you're a Star Trek fan or not, recognize this iconic music from Star Trek, the original series. But something may have struck you as not quite right or not quite familiar. And that's because we're not hearing the voice of William Shatner as James T. Kirk, but rather the voice of Vic Mignogna, who is responsible for a web series that has, in a sense, continued those original voyages of the Starship Enterprise, continued the legacy of Star Trek, the original series, beyond those three seasons. 11 episodes in all have been created. And yesterday, released to the public for the first time, was the last of those 11 episodes. And with it, this particular journey of Star Trek continues, comes to a close. We're going to have several guests talking about this experience of Star Trek Continues, someone who has been a part of the cast, someone who has both directed and written episodes. But we begin, as we well should, with the brilliant man responsible for it, Vic Mignogna, who not only has been portraying Captain Kirk through these 11 episodes, but also has served in many other capacities, writing and directing and serving as executive producer, and in many respects sort of the spiritual touchstone for this series, insisting that it remain true to the visual and sort of spiritual center of what that original series was all about. Vic Mignogna, we welcome you back to The Morning Show.
Thank you so much. It's a real pleasure to join you. Thank you so much.
I am really, really glad to be talking with you as all of this comes to a close. I suspect some of our listeners heard our first interview when we kind of sketched a bit of the history of this program.
Right.
For the sake of someone who didn't know that, although I think it needs to be a fairly brief account, please just say a word about what sort of generated your idea of devoting so
right.
much time and so much of your own money into this venture.
In a nutshell, when I was a little boy, I loved the original classic series of Star Trek and loved the characters, loved the storytelling, and it actually inspired me to get involved in many creative endeavors as a young boy that I had never been in before, acting, filmmaking, building props, making sets, all of those kind of things. And then fast forward several decades, and I thought, wouldn't it be neat? The original series was abruptly canceled in its third season. There was no ending. There was no completion to it. And so I thought, wouldn't it be neat to pick it up right where it left off and finish the five-year mission of the Enterprise, return it to Earth, and explain what happened to everyone and leave everyone and everything right where it was when the motion picture picked it up. And that is, I'm very proud to say, exactly what we have done. And I'm so enormously proud of the team, of our production team, and what we've accomplished in the what ended up being our own five-year mission in right. these 11 episodes.
I know that in our original conversation, which people can find on the WGTD archive, people can kind of hear us discussing the matters of legality and the way in which you, and for that matter, other fans who have attempted
sure.
to create similar sort of homages to the original series, have been permitted to do so by CBS, just as long as you didn't cross the line of making any money. They determined that
correct.
It actually made sense to allow this this legacy to sort of live on and grow in this respect.
Well, so, I think they understand that there are millions of people out there that love the original series and want to express their love for it, and it certainly serves them and their franchise to allow people to do so, as long as, like you said, they don't cross the line of trying to personally profit from it.
So you have created 11 of these episodes, and over the course of how many years?
Well, if you take into account the original three little vignettes that we created before the first episode, it's been right at a five-year mission.
Wow. Okay, so you weren't just speaking poetically there, but a little more literally.
No, I was not. We started our production with three little short vignettes, basically to introduce the world to these actors in these iconic roles and kind of set up the first episode. So if you take those vignettes into account, all of which, by the way, are available for free to watch at StarTrekContinues.com, it's been a five-year mission.
Right. You created sets to exactly reflect what that original series looked like. You assembled some very gifted writers to create scripts, and of course assembled some very capable actors to assume these roles, and very special guests, some of whom have been associated with the original Star Trek series. But by and large, many, many people, in fact the vast majority, have been people you know. In our original interview, you said you had no interest of making this with strangers. You wanted to make this with friends, with people
absolutely
you love.
Absolutely. I think that bears out when you watch the episodes. I think there is an intangible sensation that people get when they watch our shows. And I think that sensation is these people like each other and they like what they're doing. They're having a good time doing it. They're not just paid, you know, players. They're not just hired guns. They are people who literally, who genuinely like each other and feel strongly about what they're doing.
How difficult was it to create these 11 episodes? That is, what needed to happen in order for you to be ready to do the next one? Because you did not create this the way the original series was done, which of course was kind of a brutal gauntlet of episode upon episode upon episode with essentially no break in between them.
Right.
And of course,
well, I will tell you, Greg, it's been a lot harder than I thought it would be. That is the genuine truth. I said it was a lot harder than I thought it would be.
Harder.
That is the genuine truth. I thought I had an idea of what was going to be involved. I've worked in production, film production, television production, acting, theater, my whole life. And I thought I had an idea of what would be involved. And the reality of creating a show like this with so many moving parts and so many people was a lot more complex than I thought it would be. I'm very proud of what we've done. I'm very, very proud of the people that I brought on board. Pardon the pun. The people that I brought on board to assume the positions of responsibility, not only just the actors, but even more so the production people, the people that ran the makeup department or the camera department or the lighting department or the wardrobe department. These were all people that I knew and loved. And every time we would make an episode, we would all come together like a big family. And they give it 115%, and I'm very, very proud of everybody involved.
How difficult was it to reconvene everybody you wanted when it was time to make yet another episode? I mean, was it difficult for people to hold open
difficult.
Their calendars?
It was very difficult. It was very difficult, and I'll tell you why. If I said, hey, Greg, I'll give you $50,000 if you'll come down and play Spock for this episode, he'd be like, I'm there. Sure, count me in. But we don't have money to pay people, and we don't have a budget and a studio production budget behind us. So every time we wanted to make an episode, we were at the mercy of everyone's goodwill and everyone's schedule and everyone's volunteering their time. So it was difficult. When you consider also that, like, if you're going to shoot a scene on the bridge, that means that Uhura's got to be there, Sulu's got to be there, Chekhov's got to be there, Spock probably, Scotty maybe, Kirk definitely. Well, the reality of having all the people there at the same time to shoot some of those things gets very tricky in scheduling, especially when we all have our own careers and responsibilities and families and obligations. So it was no small task to be able to schedule all of these episodes. And I'll tell you something else. I've worked with a lot of fan productions. And if there is one word that is synonymous with fan productions, it's attrition. I mean, you want to talk about attrition rate. There are fan productions, every time you see one, they've got different people playing the roles. Because they've got different people directing and different people shooting and different people in makeup, all different people. Because when you're doing something like this purely for love and passion and you're not able to pay people, it's very, very hard to keep the same people together. Usually they'll say, you know what, I did it the last time. I was part of an episode. It was fun. And I don't want to do it anymore. I just wanted to do it that one time. But I'm very, very proud to say that with the exception, when you're talking about 40 or 50 people, with the exception of two or three people, we've had the same 40 or 50 people working on this show since the very beginning. And that's quite extraordinary.
You were very anxious to do as good a job as possible to recreate the look and feel and spirit of the original series, and have really accomplished that. I mean, I think all critics would agree that no other fan-generated series in the Star Trek universe has come close to achieving what you have. As you thought about doing that and being true to the original series, what were you maybe most concerned about? What did you think might be the most difficult thing in terms of achieving being that sense of truth to the original?
Well, I think in answer to your question, there wasn't anything I was really afraid of. I wanted to pay tribute to Star Trek. I mean, for me, I didn't even know if we would get beyond one episode. I only did one episode because I wanted to pay tribute to the original series. You know what I mean? I wanted to do as good a job as I could recreating a Star Trek episode the way that I remembered them. So that was my intention. I didn't know if we would do more than one. And I think for me personally, the only thing that kind of scared me was that, you know, I've loved this character for so long. You know what I mean? I loved Captain Kirk since I was a little boy. And the opportunity to play him, when you think about it kind of recreationally, is a dream come true. But when you actually have to do it, and you know that you're going to put it out and be judged by millions of people, that gets a little bit scary. So so there was that. You know what I mean? There was a little bit of nervousness about that. But apart from that, I mean, I just knew that there was also a concern, because whenever you say fan film, there's a stigma attached to anything when it's called a fan film. And you know, there are all varying degrees of quality of fan productions. And there was obviously a bit of concern about that as well, wanting it to be as good as it could be hoping that it would not, you know, be dismissed as kind of a lame fan endeavor.
Well, you've certainly managed, you and everybody associated with it have managed to achieve some very impressive excellence indeed.
Thank you for that.
How does it feel to be done with it? A project that has been so near and dear to your heart. I mean, does it feel okay that it's coming to a close? And what do you see in your future in relation to the Star Trek universe?
Well, I have very, very mixed feelings, Greg. I love this series. I mean, and I love the people that we made this series with. I'm proud of what we've done, and I think that that we've just gotten better. I feel like each episode is better than the last in different ways. And so part of me is very, very, very sad that it's done. However, part of me is relieved because it was a lot of work, and I do several different things with my career and my life, and schedule is pretty busy as a voice actor. And I'm very, very proud that we did what we set out to do. You know, my original goal was to finish the 5-year mission of the Enterprise. It was to complete the last year and bring the Enterprise home and leave everybody where they were when the motion picture picked them up. And I'm extremely proud that we did that. What we've done has never been done before, nor do I think it will ever be done again. And certainly, if it is, nowhere near to the level that we have done it. What we've done is historic. It's iconic. We have given an ending to what is arguably the most iconic television series in history that never had an ending. And I'm very proud of that. And so if we had to end, I'm proud to say that I feel like, in the words of the famous writer, we did not end with a whimper, but we ended with a bang. We ended strong, as we intended.
Absolutely.
And it will be missed. I mean, I will miss the people that I made it with, and we've made lifelong friends, and it will be sad that we're not doing any more, but I'm very, very proud with the way we've wrapped it up.
As well you should be. Vic Mignogna, who is responsible for Star Trek Continues. And if you go to the Star Trek Continues website, you can view all 11 episodes and other materials there that even more fully tell this incredible story. Vic Mignogna, thank you so much for joining me today on The Morning Show. It's been a pleasure to speak with you, and I congratulate you again on this fine effort with Star Trek Continues.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having us, and I wish you the best.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We're focusing our attention today on a fan-generated non-commercial web series called Star Trek Continues, conceived as something of a sequel to Star Trek, the original series. The 11th and final episode of Star Trek Continues, titled To Boldly Go, was released to the public yesterday. We speak now with the man who helped shape the story for the finale and directed it, James Kirwan, who also had a very significant hand in several other episodes of Star Trek Continues, both as writer and director. His background is primarily as a film director. I asked James Kirwan what kind of an adjustment and challenge it was to shift from the format of film to that of episodic television, and also what special challenges he faced as a director of Star Trek Continues.
Coming on to any television series is, especially partway through, you have to be very cognizant as a director that it's not your vision, it's the vision of the executive producer. And that, in this case, is Vic Mignogna. And in the case of a web series like Star Trek Continues, which is really kind of basically it's a period piece, it's continuing a TV show that took place in made in 1969. And all of the aesthetics, the camera work, the lighting, sound, everything that you do, that even some of the acting style, has to not only fit within Vic's overall vision as executive producer, but also within the overall vision of Star Trek, the original series, which was established 50 years ago. So that's an incredibly different way of directing than if you're directing, say, your own feature film or your own play, where basically you're the kind of the author of the vision. This is about taking the essence of what Star Trek, the original series is, and that's the vision. And it's not your personal vision. So it's a very different mindset to get into. It's really, I think, an interesting challenge for me, and I think I've grown a lot as a director by doing it.
Right. And I should think that for Vic Mignogna, who I assume is the person who brought you on board, that one of the challenges he's probably faced, too, is to make sure that everybody he was bringing on board, from cast members to writers to directors and producers, were all in sync with what you just described. That is, paying tribute to the original series, in a sense, wanting to continue its look and feel and approach without in any way sort of aping it or even inadvertently making fun of it.
Exactly. Yeah, it's really hard because you don't want it to be like an impersonation, and even in the acting styles, like these actors who are recreating characters from the original series, you you don't want to do impressions of them. You don't want to do impersonations of them. You want the actor to make the character their own while having a hint of the original actor who played the role. And writing that line between just all out being campy, I guess, and paying tribute, but also somewhat modernized, making it play so that somebody in 2017 who is a Star Trek, the original series fan is going to be engaged by it. That's an interesting line that you have to ride, because you can't pretend like it is 1969 right now. I mean, we have to be cognizant of the entire universe of Star Trek that has been created since then and what people now looking back at the original series would like to see. So that's why about half of our episodes have featured certain callbacks to other episodes, and half of them have been original stories. And that's the line that I think we kind of found the perfect line to ride.
I love that. For instance, the episode that brought you on board, Fairest of Them All, was in a sense a continuation of a classic Star Trek original series episode called Mirror, Mirror, in which four crew members on the Enterprise are switched into an alternative universe in which many things appear to be the same, but many things appear to be drastically different, including the whole purpose of what used to be the Federation, which in this alternate universe is a brutal empire instead. And very, very intriguing episode that is beautifully evoked in this episode, Fairest of Them All. When you were brought on board, for instance, I think that was someone else's story, and then it was your job to transform that story into a workable teleplay. Just say a word about the challenge of that with that teleplay and the other teleplays for which you're responsible.
Well, I actually really like adapting other people's stories or other people's works into the teleplay format. I think that's kind of a skill that I've kind of settled into that I enjoy. This particular story about the Mirror Universe, Fairest of Them All, was Vic's story. We had originally discussed, he and I were working on another a short film right before Star Trek Continues that I was directing and he was in, along with Kipley Brown. And during the course of that, that's when he suggested that I come on board Star Trek Continues. And he wanted to do a Mirror Universe episode. I wanted to do a Mirror Universe episode. So we kind of tossed our stories back and forth and very quickly realized that his story was way better than the idea that I had. So we went with his story, kind of fleshed it out, and then with me, and then I turned it into a teleplay with him working on that as well. So and a lot of the subsequent episodes that I haven't necessarily written the story for, I have either written or co-written the teleplay on. Mm. So I think virtually most of the except for episodes 5 and 7. Everything since 3, I've had some role in either story or teleplay writing.
Right. One of the things I have appreciated most about the writing of Star Trek Continues is that it has remained so true to the original series, which I think Gene Roddenberry often characterized as really an action-adventure series and a drama series rather than a sci-fi series. And I think it's fair to say that basically, everything that has followed the original series in terms of Next Generation and the other series have been much more science fiction series based. I mean, and when one looks at the dialogue, it's just full of science or quasi-science or kind of pretend science that's mm-hmm. often an integral part of science fiction. Can you just say a word about this distinction and maybe the challenge of trying to keep all of those other more contemporary approaches to Star Trek out of your head as you set about writing these teleplays?
Well, yeah, Star Trek, the original series is, it is science fiction. It's just not technobabble science fiction. it's science fiction in a more genuine sense that it just simply uses science fiction-y concepts as a setting for character-based stories, for moral dilemmas, for dramatic stories in which there are ethical tugs. And it simply uses science fiction to shine a light on that, like some of the great episodes of the original series that were that dealt with socio-political issues of the day, were, you know, posited them, oh, this alien race is dealing with this issue, or this alien race is looking at us and viewing us in this way. And so in that way, you can take, the original series was able to deal with social issues that most TV shows in the 60s couldn't deal with. They couldn't get past, the networks to actually do these things. But by setting it in outer space with aliens, you're able to do it. But that's great because, like, so much great classic science fiction, like the books of Robert Heinlein, the books of Robert J. Sawyer, who wrote Our Finale, actually, science fiction it's not about the science fiction. The science fiction is the setting to shine a light on the human condition. And that's what was so awesome about TOS, I think.
Absolutely. I completely agree. One thing I wonder, as particularly now as the director of a number of these series, including the finale To Boldly Go, when I first watched Star Trek, the original series, I don't think it ever dawned on me that what I was seeing looked in any way primitive. And I think in the 1960s, it didn't look primitive. It looked remarkably wonderful. Now, seeing those same episodes, of course, in 2017, it has a very primitive look to it. And I remember watching To Boldly Go, that would be the first part, and the scene aboard the Romulan ship where they're trying to fire their weapon and it's not working. But I'm looking at this thing and thinking, boy, that just looks so plain and so pretty. That looks like something I could build in my garage. versus if such a scene were created today, the visuals of that would be completely different in terms of what that console would look like and the blinking lights and so on. Did it ever feel in any way frustrating to you that you were, in a sense, constrained to the relatively primitive visual palette of what was possible in the 1960s? Did you ever feel yourself really wishing that this moment could be conveyed in a way that we would do so in 2017? Or was that okay?
Yes, to an extent, but I wouldn't use the word frustrated. I definitely had to shut off so many of my modern film directorial instincts and skills, and the way that you look at a scene, the way that you shoot a scene, all of that, the way a control panel is going to look. Looking at it as a director in the 21st century, I very quickly had to realize I can't think in those terms. So the way that I approached it was kind of like I was saying before, it's a period piece. We're not making this Romulan control panel look like it really would in the year 2270. We're making it look like they thought it would look in 1969. So once you start thinking of it as we're doing a historical recreation, this is what the panel looked like, we have to buy that fully. Like, when that Romulan bridge, when those controls were being designed, we literally went through the original episodes. We're like, this button is red, this is yellow, here's what this thing does, here's this little slider control here, and we just bought into it hook, line, and sinker. That's the only way to do it. You have to just be completely genuine and true to how it originally was, like you would if you were recreating, the Old West in a film. Hmm. So that's kind of the mentality, I think, that I quickly had to develop.
Right. We should mention, although we're not going to mention any of them by name, but there have been other series sort of like Star Trek Continues, that is, fan-generated sequels to the original series, some of which have endeavored, at least to some extent, maybe not quite as successfully, to try to at least evoke the look, the physical appearance of the original series. I think most commentators and critics would say none of them have come close to approaching the excellence of Star Trek Continues. I'm just curious if you, as a Star Trek fan, have watched any of those other fan-generated sequels to the original series, and if doing so was at all helpful to you. And I guess I'm also curious for you to say what, in your mind, has distinguished Star Trek Continues from any of the other series that are sort of like it.
I had not actually watched any of the other fan films before I came on to do Star Trek Continues. But once Vic asked me to start doing it, I did. I have gone and I watched several of the other ones. And, you know, as you said, they vary in quality from rather amateur to quite good. But I think every one of them has kind of a different, like a different mentality, a different vision of what exactly they're trying to achieve. With Star Trek Continues, I think the difference with it is that Vic's goal was twofold. Number one, that the actors on screen playing the lead roles and the major guest stars, as well as the above-the-line crew and the crew department heads behind the camera, were all industry professionals. In other words, they weren't fans who weren't actors, but you know, just wanted to be actors, and same with the crew. So that's why, even though we shot in Georgia, most of our cast and major crew department heads all flew out from Los Angeles for every shoot. So he looked for people who had significant amount of experiences in the film or television industry. So that's the first thing. And I think the second thing is that while other series have, their approaches have been different. Some have tried to go for a little more modern feel, the aspect ratio, you know, a 16:9 aspect ratio instead of a 4:3 aspect ratio like they used in the 60s. Some of them have had a little more of a modern feel to the stories or the directing, whereas our concept from the beginning was we're going to restrict ourselves, like I said, as if it's a period piece. You know, the way that we shoot it, the way that we light it, the film grain that's on it, the film shutter that we apply in post to the credits, all of those things have to have a very genuine cinematographic and directorial feel from the late 60s. And that's something that many, if not most of the fan films have not embraced.
Right. So you are.
I think that's why when people watch it, they say, oh, that looks so much like it was made back then.
Right. You are being authentic to that degree, which is really an extraordinary accomplishment. I also want to say about this marvelous series finale, again, which you directed and you helped create the story, that part of what makes it really special is that it actually evokes two episodes from the original series, the second pilot, Where No Man Has Gone Before, and then an episode from the third season, The Enterprise Incident. And the weaving together in that respect of two different classic episodes, I think, is an absolutely brilliant idea and executed extremely well. I want you to say a word about sort of a casting coup that also is a mark of true distinction for this episode. Tell our listeners about a certain actress whose presence is so special in this episode.
Well, when the story concept for the finale was really a collaboration between Robert Sawyer and myself and Vic, and then Robert went on to write the teleplays. But one thing that as we were kind of breaking the story, as it's called, when we were just sitting around tossing around ideas, figuring out what we wanted to do was, you know, we wanted to tie it back in to the beginning, as many shows in the 60s did if they were lucky enough to have a finale. And Vic had said, look, I'd really like the Romulans to be involved. We've never done a Romulan episode. We've never really done a Klingon episode. Let's do a Romulan episode before we're done. But he said, I don't want the Romulans to be the big bad guy. The big bad threat has to be something else. And that's when Rob came in and said, oh, what if it's these Espers from the beginning and so forth. And I kind of said, well, if we're going to have the Romulans in it, but they're not going to be the enemy, the only real way to do that is to somehow figure out a way for the Romulans to kind of temporarily side with Kirk. And I can only really think of one Romulan that kind of would maybe do that because she's got a little bit of a bond with Spock. And that's the Romulan commander from the Enterprise incident. So we kind of should bring her back. It's a fan favorite character. We all talked about it and decided to do it. But of course, the problem is it's such an iconic character. And in our show, we've done a pretty good job when we've brought back characters to find actors or actresses who really do look like them and act like them and speak like them. We couldn't find anybody who looked like or behaved like or spoke like or had the presence of Joanne Linville. And we were looking around. We couldn't think of anyone. We couldn't find anyone. And our friend Julian Higgins, who directed a couple of episodes of the show, he was tossing it around his head too, trying to help. And he just one day on a whim, he just Googled Joanne Linville and realized she had a daughter, Amy Rydell, who's an actress, who's her who's the age that she was in the original series, who looks just like her. And so we did a little bit of sleuthing and got a phone number and an email address for Amy. And Vic started pestering her to do the show. And at first, of course, she thought, who are these fans contacting me to reprise my mom's role? That's kind of weird. But then she quickly realized that this is a very genuine thing and that our hearts are all in the right place and that we're all professionals and that we're doing this for the love of the original series. So she ran it past her mom. She talked to her mom about it. Her mom encouraged her to do it, and she came and did it. And she is such a dead ringer for her mom, both in performance, in voice, and in appearance. It has really blown people away when she appears on that view screen for the first time in the episode.
Right.
People's
I mean,
jaws are hitting the floor.
we can scarcely believe our eyes. It is really, yeah. really amazing. And she's a marvelous yeah. actress, and it's hard to imagine this episode working to the extent that it does without her presence. James Kerwin, frequent writer, frequent director of Star Trek Continues, responsible for directing the marvelous episode series finale, To Boldly Go. James Kerwin, I am so grateful to you for making time in your busy schedule to chat with me about your participation in Star Trek Continues. Thank you so much, and best wishes with all that stretches ahead for you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Evasive maneuvers. Brace for impact.
Romulan weapon reaching full charge in 3, 2, 1.
A moment of tension on the bridge of the USS Enterprise, and that last voice you heard was that of Kipley Brown, who happens
hello.
To be... Hello, and welcome. a native of Madison, Wisconsin, as a matter of fact, and a professional actress who has also been performing in a number of different episodes of this web-based series called Star Trek Continues. And just as the last episode of this series is about to be released, I'm excited to be able to speak with Kipley Brown about the pleasure she has had in being part of Star Trek Continues. Kipley Brown, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Glad that we can have this conversation. Can you explain how this opportunity came your way?
Well, I have worked for several years with a name you'll recognize from the credits of Star Trek Continues. He's directed a lot of the episodes and written them, several as well, James Kerwin. We've worked on past projects together, a film called Yesterday Was a Lie and a short called Are You Our Genesis? And then he got invited to direct an episode of this. And when I found out, I was like, can I do that too, please? That looks amazing. At first, actually, when he first told me about it, I thought fan fiction. I wasn't quite sure about that. But then I saw an episode and I said, wow, this looks like just like the original series. So I jumped on board. I'm, by the way, a huge Star Trek fan. I always have been.
Hmm.
And, you know, I was on an episode of Star Trek Enterprise, even, which was one of the greatest thrills of my lifetime as a huge Trek fan.
And I'm assuming that every person we see on the screen when we watch an episode of Star Trek Continues is there because they are a fan. I mean, I can't imagine someone seeking out this kind of opportunity, not being a fan of Star Trek, the original series, and wanting very much to be part of this continuation of it.
You're absolutely right. And it's really a labor of love as fan fiction. It's not for profit. So no one is, you know, walking away with a fat paycheck or anything like that. It's there for the love of the show, of Gene Roddenberry's, you know, vision of the future.
As one of the cast members, say a word about the efforts that all of you seem to have to want to be true to the kind of acting that we saw in the original series. I mean, it's very clear just at a glance that, as you've already mentioned, great care has been taken to recreate the look of that original series. And in the writing of the episodes, there's also, of course, been great attention given to it feeling like we're watching new episodes of the original series. What about when it comes to the way you and your colleagues are acting your roles? What do you think about in terms of wanting to evoke the spirit of the original series in that respect?
That's a great question. You know, it's actually, I would say, easier for new characters to the show that we haven't seen in the original series, because the audience is not comparing the actor to the original actor. And of course, William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy and DeForest Kelly and, you know, James Doohan are huge, huge shoes to fill. So I know that on Vic's part and anyone who plays one of the original characters, it was about embodying that character without doing an impersonation. Because, you know, can you imagine if Vic got up there and went, "Stop! I don't know what you mean," you know, and did the typical, you know, overdone Shatner impersonation. No one, you know, you wouldn't be able to actually live in the story, in the authenticity. So to me, that's a very fine line that our actors that are reprising roles that are original, that they walk, because you have to embody the character without becoming a Saturday Night Live sketch.
Mm. That really is tricky. We should mention that you are one of a number of cast members who are portraying characters that probably a lot of people might not necessarily remember from the original series, especially if you're more of a casual fan of the original series, but characters who appeared in one or more episodes of the original series, albeit maybe largely peripheral characters, you are portraying a character who appeared in the second pilot episode where No Man Has Gone Before, which is how the original series ultimately got sold to NBC and became a reality. And so you are, in a sense, someone who is recreating a character who already existed, but you probably have, I should think, at least a little bit of freedom in terms of how that character is specifically shaped. Is that right?
Much more so than any of the actors playing the iconic, you know, characters that we all know. Because the character that I'm reprising, her name is Barbara Smith, and she was a yeoman on Where No Man Has Gone Before. And she was intended to become a regular on the series. The actress's name is Andrea Drum. And before they had a chance to really use her, she got a movie offer, I believe, and left to do film. So you will miss her if you blink in Where No Man Has Gone Before. There's this a little moment when Kirk gets her name wrong, and she goes, he calls her Jones, and she says, "It's Smith, sir." And we actually paid tribute to that in the episode 3 of Star Trek Continues, Fairest of Them All.
I love that. And one of the things I guess I really do very much appreciate about Star Trek Continues is that it addresses something that I think some of us as Star Trek fans were always frustrated about, namely that the decision got made by somebody to focus more and more of the attention in the original series on those central three characters to the exclusion of so many of the other characters whom we would get an increasingly fleeting glance. And those of us who appreciated some of these other characters and who most enjoyed the episodes in which some of the secondary characters would be prominently featured, I think really grew frustrated with that. And one of the choices that's been made with Star Trek Continues is to highlight all of the characters, including some that are very much footnotes in the history of Star Trek, the original series, but here they are for us to enjoy again.
Yeah, I like that too, that you do get to explore, as you might say, the lower decks, which isn't technically accurate. As a Star Trek nerd, I should say that's not technically accurate, but yes, exactly what you just said. Although, I wrote episode 9, What Chips Are For. I wrote the teleplay for that.
Ah.
And I actually really wanted to do one of the traditional big three goes, you know, beams down to a planet episode. So it's Kirk, Spock, and McCoy form an away party, and they go down to a planet. And that's how so many episodes started. So I did. I am guilty of reprising that particular, you know, sort of trinity, exploring a planet. But, of course, it, you know, goes on to explore the lives of not only the peripheral crew, but also, of course, the residents of the planet. But I do think that some big stories live in small characters.
Absolutely. And it really helps us have a sense that we really are aboard a ship. I mean, and a ship of this size and with a mission this important is not powered nor even led by three characters alone. And the more we have a sense that we are on board that ship with its entire crew, the more it feels real to us. Just say a word about, and I had been told that, but had forgotten that you are responsible for that teleplay, for that episode again called What Ships Are For. What kind of a responsibility did it feel like to be trying to pen a teleplay that would be true to a series you loved so much?
Tremendous. It was a tremendous honor to have a chance to do it, but like you say, a responsibility, because I did want to pay tribute to the original in an authentic way. And I, you know, in preparation, among other things, of course, I've seen every one of the original series episodes, but I went on a 3-day binge of just watching them all over and over and over again, so that by the end of that, I had the voices of the characters like living in my head. And so that's what I started to write after that. I had nothing but Star Trek on the brain. And just remembering why I love Star Trek, keeping that in mind, because so many people, they want to take this idea of Star Trek and, quote, improve upon it. And to me, you can't. You can't improve upon the original. You can change it and, you know, bring it into different time periods. But the vision that Gene Roddenberry had for this future, I mean, I ask myself, why has it been around for so long? Why has this show stood out from this, you know, the 60s? It had many, 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 many shows, but this one keeps its life. It just keeps renewing with every generation. And I think it did. It starts with this, you know, think of the time period. It was where, you know, the Bay of Pigs and the nuclear missile crisis and mutually assured mass destruction and all the scary stuff going on in the world. And all these other science fiction writers, you know, they had the apocalyptic end of the world over and over and over again. And Gene Roddenberry said, no, not only don't we blow ourselves up, but in the future, we're not a military force, we're an exploratory force. And guess what? On the bridge, we've got a Japanese character. We've got a black character. We've got a Russian character. You know, all these various, you know, people that are working in unison together on the bridge. There's no racism. There's no war between this group, and I just this sort of synchronicity of society.
Mm. Something for us to aspire to, and certainly that was, I think you're right, a very key element in why this series resonated so powerfully then and now. Kipley Brown, one of the cast members of Star Trek Continues, and responsible for one of the teleplays as well, among these 11 episodes that have aired, carrying on the legacy of Star Trek, the original series, very proudly. Kipley Brown, I'm so honored and pleased to speak with you, and very best wishes with all that stretches ahead for you, and thank you for being part of the morning show.
Oh, thank you, too, and live long and prosper.
To Boldly Go, the exciting conclusion to Star Trek Continues, can now be viewed on the Star Trek Continues website or on YouTube. And I want to mention that actress Kipley Brown plays a very pivotal role in that final episode. My thanks to WGTD's own Jim McClure for his help in arranging these three interviews. I'm Gregory Berg. Support for WGTD's Morning Show comes from the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenosians who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Mr. Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD nearly 40 years ago and later served as station manager and an occasional Morning Show co-host. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, Brian Albrecht, along with the CEO.